Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
British Lovestruck is a DJ and producer blending house, hard house and trance into a high-energy signature sound. His breakout track, What's a Girl to Do, initially an unofficial edit, was officially released via Spinning Records and quickly picked up by Armin van Buuren, James Hype, Martin Garrix and Oliver Heldens, launching him into the spotlight. Since then, Lovestruck has released on cult favorite labels like Tidy Tracks, Trick, and BB Recordings, showcasing his ability to reinvent rave classics and deliver original peak time weapons. His rising profile has earned him slots at Ministry of Sound, Creamfields, Wrong Indoor Festival, and Ben Hemsley's Ibiza Rocks residency, cementing his place as one of the UK's most exciting new dance acts. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Lovestruck.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Thank you for having me, by the way. I'm currently based in the UK. So I live in Bedford and, yeah, just outside of London, if people don't know where it is, near Milton Keynes.
How, when, why does the name Lovestruck come to be? How did you choose that?
I got inspired by the Southside Spinners song, Lovestruck. Mm-hmm. It's a classic trance song from back in the late 90s.
That just reignited or gave you that idea for the name?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to find one on the internet, but I couldn't find one. So I found that one. I was like, I'll use that.
Is it the same spelling as the way the song was spelled?
Yeah, Lovestruck, yeah.
Oh, we have to get inspiration from wherever we can.
It's so hard to find a name now as well, because there's so many that are taken.
Yeah. Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, cool, I want to be in this DJ production world? And how did that journey progress?
Yeah, well, basically, I started to play Eye of the Tiger on the keyboard when I was about eight years old. So I had this little Casio and it used to flash up with the note, with the song. So I didn't know what the notes were, but I used to just press the lights in time and things. And then I bought a guitar and I tried to learn the guitar, but I found it quite difficult. But then I've always been into music and that, like dance music mainly, but any type of music. And then I was listening to Judge Jules. And I think it might have been one of his Radio 1 shows. And I was like, what kind of music is this? I think it was like trance music at the time. And I was like, right, I've got to try and get into this. So I started learning to produce on Fruity Loops 3, I think it was. And I was using a Mod Plug tracker. So it's basically like you assign the samples to numbers and it just scrolls down the screen. So I made a few tracks on that and I put it on cassette and played it to my friends and things like that. It's mainly like hard house, but yeah, and I got involved through that and I started to learn the piano as well. So I got to grade 8 on the piano, passed that. Then my teacher wanted me to do the diploma, but I didn't really have the time to do it. So there's one day I was practicing because I was going to start teaching and my partner, she said to me, what are you doing? You know, what are you actually doing? And then I said, right, this is the time to get back to the music. So I went straight back to it. And then the rest is history, really.
You were going to start teaching music or teach something else?
Yeah, teach children to play the piano. Because I find when you learn the classical teaching, it can be quite regimental. Yes. So you pass a grade, then you do another grade. And so you're not actually like learning the chords. That's something you have to go away yourself and actually learn. Yeah, I find it quite regimental, but I used to practice about 30, 40 hours a week, piano.
And do you still play it now?
Yeah, now and again. I've got a piano at home, but it's kind of gathering dust. I've got a keyboard as well, but it helps because I know a bit of theory as well. So I find when I go and make my own music, it's easier.
You referenced something earlier, Fruity Loops. What is that?
Yeah, so I have a DAW, digital audio workstation. So you've
Okay.
got a lot of people who use Ableton now or Cubase, Logic,
Yes.
but it don't matter really what you use. It's just they all give you the same results, but it's the person using it, I guess.
I'm not sure if you guys have it over there or had it. In South
Yeah.
Africa, there used to be a cereal called Fruit Loops.
It's not a bit like the one in America. It's like, I can't remember what it's called, Lucky Charms.
Yeah, I think so. Like the
Yeah,
different
yeah.
colors and that. Yeah. So when you say that,
Yeah,
my
yeah.
brain went straight to a colorful cereal. You moved to focus on music.
Yeah.
How did that
Yeah.
then become professional? So yes, it was your intention to do so, but what were the next steps for it to become completely professional?
Well, like I was releasing on my own record label. I set up my own record label and I had the intention of just releasing my own music. And then one of my friends said to me, you should send a demo to Trick, Patrick Toppin's record label, and Tidy Tracks. So the first demo I sent to Tidy Tracks was a track called Party People, and they loved it. And I was like, oh my God, like I was on the floor in tears when they said they loved it, because that Tidy Tracks is such an iconic label. It represents to me hard house going back in like late 90s. And when they said they wanted it, I was like, wow. So I did them another track, and that came out as an EP. And then I sent a demo to Trick, Patrick Toppin, and I chucked in the Fatima Yamaha remix as well with one of them. And he played it in Tenerife, and it went massive on TikTok. And people was going, oh, what remix is this? And all that. And he was playing it a lot. And then everyone else was asking me for it. And then I saw Ketima play it on TikTok where he was playing, and it just blew up, and it was crazy. It was so crazy. And that's kind of how it kind of got into like making it as a job kind of thing. Well, part time. I still have a job. I work in a supermarket by night shift. Yeah.
Okay, not for long though. Let's put it out there.
Well, I hope so.
When things start exploding on TikTok and these peers of yours are playing your remixes in it, what is that feeling for you when you realize, like, oh wow, it's there? Is it a bit of imposter syndrome?
It can be a bit overwhelming, especially like at first you're like, wow, is it if when you hear one of your songs in a club, it's like an amazing feeling, and you see the reaction. But when you see it on TikTok and you're reading all the comments, it's like, wow, it's a bit overwhelming. You can't believe that. I'll be honest, I'm not very confident. I am confident, but
Yes.
I don't think I'm that good at making music, to be honest. Then when I see people like loving what I'm doing, it's great. It makes me feel really good. So it's just a bit overwhelming, though. It can be.
Okay, well, let's throw that thought out that we are
Yeah.
brilliant at creating music. Let's put that out there. We've put that in headlights. That's the affirmation for today.
Yeah.
How do you create a song?
Well, because I know a bit about the chords and stuff, I just come up with an idea. I come up with a melody. I usually start with a melody and then just put a beat over it and then just build it around that. But I usually have a song done within about 3 to 4 hours. So I kind of do about maybe 4 or 5 songs a week.
Do you ever collaborate with others, or is that still to come?
Yeah, I've done a song with a guy called Pickle. He wears a big pickle outfit. You've seen him. Yeah, he's cool. So we've done a song together, which called Paradise 3000, and it's kind of a party song. So I love making party music, feel good music. So songs that make people feel happy, and I do like songs in minor keys that are quite sad, depending on how you feel. But I like the uplifting songs, the melodic melodies and things like
Now, when you play a set, a DJ set,
that. Yeah.
is it 100% your own music, remixes of others? What is the breakdown? How do you choose if you are going to remix other artists? What is that process?
Yeah, it's predominantly my own music in a
Okay.
set. So it'll be like remixes I've done, or remixes that are not released, or edits I've done, or just my own music, original tracks I'll try out. And the best place I find is to try them out on a dance floor, so you can see what the reaction is, and you know if you can change bits or you don't need to change much, or something's not quite loud enough. It's quite a good place. My advice to DJs now would be just to play some of your own stuff out to get the reaction, because I've seen a lot of DJs don't actually play. They'll make a song and they won't test it out, or they're a bit nervous to test it out. But I don't care. I just love playing music. So if it works, you know, you got a good basis there that, oh yeah, this could be a good song. Do you get what I mean?
I'm disagreeing with what you said earlier about not having confidence about your music, because if you didn't have confidence, you wouldn't be playing your own stuff. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, it's just self-belief.
Yes.
It's hard, because I'll be honest, like, I got bullied when I was younger, and it kind of affects you when you get older. So you kind of think you're not good enough at things, but I've got better. Do you get what I mean? So
I totally get it. I was also bullied when I was younger. Completely, I understand. And as I'm saying it to you, I'm saying it to me as well, because that I call it the parrot on the shoulder that keeps squawking, that says, you know, you can't do it, you're not good enough, et cetera, et cetera. So as I'm talking to you, I'm telling the parrot to shut up.
yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, it's quite weird. I used to tell people when I was younger, I said I'll be on those stages playing massive gigs. And everyone used to say to me, oh, you won't be able to do it, you're not good enough, blah, blah, blah. And I used to say, I'll be up there, I know I will. And now I've been booked this year for Creamfield, so, which is one of the biggest festivals in England. So,
and when is that?
That's in August. So I'm playing on the Thursday, which I think is the 24th.
That's amazing. So, hashtag drop that microphone on those people's heads. But
I believe, like, in life, if you feel you can do something, if you believe it, it will happen.
Yes.
You've just got to have faith in yourself and trust the process and have patience.
And also to quieten down the voices from the trauma in the past as well.
Yeah, that's it. Like you said, you kind of have to tell it to go away, because you always get those doubts. Oh, that's not good. Do you get what I mean? And things like that.
I totally get what you mean. Being a DJ, it's about understanding the energy of the people in the room. Is this something that's come naturally to you, or you've actually had to work on it over time?
I must admit, when I first started DJing, when I was about 16, 17, I first DJed in a club when I was 18, and I was so scared. I was like literally shaking. My manager at the time, he gave me the first gig, and he was saying, if you don't go up there and do it, you'll never get another opportunity. I was like, right, I'm going to do it. And I was terrified. I was literally like shaking, but I did it. And then I started doing more like regular nights there. And I was warming up for the student nights and things like that. I'd never felt I was quite ready to do it, like on a bigger stage, on a bigger scale. But now I love it. I go out on the front, I go and dance. I don't care. It's like I did a gig with Matty Ralph. In Ibiza Rocks for Ben Emsley on Monday, and I went out on the front and I was dancing. But I love it. I just love it. I love entertaining. But I've had nights where I've, in the past when I've been out, and people have remembered those sets or something that's happened, and that's what I want to give to people, that they remember that night. Oh, I was there in so and so, and Lovestruck played, and it was amazing. And they can tell their kids in like 20, 30 years and things like that. It's great.
You know, even though we had this issue of being bullied in the past, but it also allows us to be strong in the sense in our individuality and our uniqueness and authenticity. So when it comes to situations like that, dancing in front, which a lot of people don't necessarily do, we will do that because we've had the experience already of being teased and bullied. So even though there's confidence and belief issues, we're like, you don't care. We're weird in any case.
Yeah, that's it. I think it helps getting older, though. I'm in my 40s, so I think when you get past 40, you kind of stop caring a bit what people think.
Yes. So you've got the upcoming gig at Creamfields in August. What else is happening?
I'm playing a gig in Lawn next month with David Forbes and Mark Sherry, and that's going to be to a crowd of like 40 to 50,000 people. So that I'm looking forward to that. So that's like a free festival for families. And they have a big bonfire. I think it's the world's biggest bonfire, I think.
Oh, okay.
But they're building it now. Yeah, it's Craigie Hill Festival in Larne.
Sorry, where's Lon?
So that bigger. It's in Northern Ireland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I had quite a few gigs in Ireland lately because my song was quite big over there. So I've been over there quite a bit now. But I love it over there, though. It's great. It's great. People are lovely.
I know it's very secretive in your guys' world. So anything you can have a sneak peeks on?
Well, like I said, I've got the one coming with Pickle. Just trying to think what else. Yeah, there's quite a few more. Yeah. It's hard because, you know, you don't want to give too much weight. Yeah, I like to drop it in a set and people go, is that your track? Okay, yeah.
We'll keep it for the surprises for the set.
I mean, there's one I've done with, it's not a collab. It's Mauro Picotto. He's done a melody and it's amazing. And I've done a remix of it and it's such a, like, feel-good tune. It takes you right back to that late nineties. But yeah, it's good. That one's good.
Okay, we'll wait to hear about that. I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys for all the hard work you do in your creation. I love the journey, the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the thank yous, and so forth. I'm not sure if you are aware, you may or may not be. Physicals are on a massive comeback. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year in the UK, there's also a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. There needs to be a certain amount of exchanges of a product in order for the product to be put in the basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people. And then we have the streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
Yeah, it can be quite like the Spotify, the streaming. I know, but some people don't like it. I mean, I've not got a problem with the streaming, to be honest. It's easier to get your music out there now, and it's easier. Like, you could literally make a song next week and have it out there to the world, like about another week later or a few days later. But I get what you're saying, that the physical, having a CD, you've literally holding something there and no one can take that away from you. That's yours to own. It's the same with like books and stuff. We went to some of the charity shops today and I was looking through the vinyl there, and it is because I used to DJ with vinyl.
Mm.
So I used to spend all my money when I used to finish at the sports shop. When I get the wages, I used to go and buy vinyl. Like, I literally spend all my money on the vinyl. But back in the day, they were like £10 for a white label or something like that. But you'd have it before anyone else would have it. And it's hard. It's pros and cons, I think, for both. So in the terms of getting your music out there, it's better. It's easier with this, not better, but it's easier with the streaming. But for the physical element, it's probably better with the vinyl and having, well, it contributes to the artist, I guess, as well.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 5 minutes, 5 years, 50 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you could think of specific songs from those artists, what would the songs be?
It's a bit controversial. I'd say Kanye West, because I find his old stuff was so original and powerful when it came out. It was so different. No one was doing that music. And he's a genius, that guy. I know he's got in the press quite a bit at the minute, but he is great at what he does. And I'd say the Beatles, obviously, they're great, great musicians. What they was doing as well, if you listen to their albums, I like their Sgt. Pepper album. You listen to it in one ear, you don't get some of the vocals, and you're like, because sometimes at work, you have to have one ear on, and you go, where's that vocal gone? But they were good at panning the sounds.
Yeah,
it's great. I'd say, obviously, Judge Jules is a big inspiration to me. So what he did with Paul Masterson, the Highgate stuff, that was brilliant. When that came out, that was quite original what they were doing. Really into everything, really, like rock stuff, indie. Oasis, I like Oasis. I know they're doing a reunion at the minute, ain't they? So one more, I'd say I like Radiohead. I like them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I find their songs are so, they're probably one of the artists you actually listen to what he's singing about. Because the melodies are so great. They just capture it. I mean, I've had one of their songs, like Bring Me to Tears, a beautiful, beautiful melody. Coldplay as well, they're good. I try not to listen to dance music that much when I'm at work. Although I make dance music, I try and get inspiration from other people's music.
Makes sense.
So,
yeah. The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I just want to say a big thank you to everyone that's supported me so far, everyone that's come and seen me play at gigs. It really means the world to me, like more than I can imagine, like express, sorry, in words. I just love performing, and I just hope people are enjoying what I'm doing, and I'll continue to do it as long as people enjoy it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.